As I said, I want to talk shortly about Isaiah's call to be a prophet, but I want to start here in 2 Chronicles 26, because this is the same time period in which, this is a little bit before the day in which Isaiah was called upon God to become a prophet for God. So I think it's good for us to look a little bit into that historical time period and see the situation that was going on in Israel at that time. In 2 Chronicles 26 and verse 16, we read of the king, the current king of that time. His name was Uzziah. And Uzziah was, for the most part, a good king. But unfortunately, he slipped up in a very bad way. He slipped up. I mean, we all make mistakes, but some mistakes, as we know on this earth, are have much greater consequences than other mistakes. But in verse 16 of 2 Chronicles 26, in verse 16, it says, speaking of King Uzziah, when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction, for he transgressed against the Lord his God by entering the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. So Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him were 80 priests of the Lord, valiant men. And they withstood King Uzziah and said to him, "It is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary, for you have trespassed. You shall have no honor from the Lord God." Then Uzziah became furious, and he had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was angry with the priests, leprosy broke out on his forehead. Therefore the priests in the house of the Lord beside the incense altar, and Azariah the chief priest and all the priests looked at him, and there on his forehead he was leprous. So they thrust him out of that place. Indeed, he also hurried to get out, because the Lord had struck him. King Uzziah was a leper until the day of his death. He dwelt in an isolated house because he was a leper, and he was cut off from the house of the Lord. Then Jotham, his son, was over the king's house, judging the people of Israel, of the land. Excuse me. So it's an interesting little account that's given here. This is the contemporary with Isaiah. Isaiah was alive and around, and he was growing up, you know, during the reign of Uzziah, and he became an adult during the reign of Uzziah. And this is the situation of the day. It was certainly a very terrible thing which happened, especially being that this was one of the good kings. And, you know, there's not a lot of good kings, you know, back in that day. And this is one of them. And yet, what a slip-up he had. The text tells or attributes his slip-up to the strength of his heart. Back in verse 16, when his heart was, when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. Pride is what he's referring to. So pride was the fall of, you know, yet another good man. We see that for whatever reason, it does not give any reason, but he had this notion that he was going to come into the house of God and burn incense on the altar. That wasn't his place to do so. That was against the law of Moses for him to do so. And even the priests, they stood up against their own king. They stood up, they said, "You get out of here." And so I think that's a good sign. I think that's a good thing about Israel at that time, is for the priests to have that kind of strength in their hearts to say, you know, "Uzziah, this is wrong. You should not be here." Nevertheless, he became angry with them. So you see the state in which he was in. It wasn't like he was excited and happy. He's prospered so well because he was such a good king, and he wants to go and he wants to do this good thing for God and offer up this incense. He thinks it's a good work. And they said, no, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I didn't realize I should be in here. That's not the case. You see how he's getting angry with them. He's becoming furious with them. And so there's certainly a problem within his heart here. And this was not just good intentions and unknowing, you know, what the issue was. So he was furious with them. But it said, the text tells us that while he was furious, leprosy broke out on his forehead. And that was the end of this man. He went to an isolated house, lived the rest of his days out in that time. And his son had to act as judge over the people, and later his son would become king once he died. But for the time being, this man had to be entirely secluded, and he had to have a client to kind of rule in his place. We certainly learn a lot about, you know, authority here. This is a good illustration of authority and respecting the authority of God, respecting what God has commanded, or destruction will come. And so we learn great applications of obedience and humility in this text. And, you know, one thing I think is so interesting about the text, it makes a whole lot of sense, but there at the end of verse 20, when you have the priest thrusting him out of the sanctuary, you know, because he'd been struck with leprosy, because he shouldn't have been there, they thrust him out. But the end of verse 20 said, indeed, he also hurried to get out because the Lord had struck him. And that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I can kind of see that picture there of this man. He's all furious, you know, about this situation, and maybe how dare the priest talk to the king. You know, look how much his pride has raised up. And then this leprosy strikes him, and he's ready to get out. I mean, you know, such an immediate change in his disposition there. He wants to get out too. They want him out, and he's glad to oblige to be thrust out. But nevertheless, this is a terrible thing that happened in Israel at the time. And if you look at the next chapter, chapter 27, when his son Jotham takes the throne, it says, Jotham was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Uzziah had done, although he did not enter the temple of the Lord. But still the people acted corruptly. And again, we get a little bit of insight of the situation in Isaiah's day, and the situation when the year in which Isaiah became a prophet. It was a time in which, according to God, the people were corrupt. Even though they had Uzziah as a good king, and of course he made that very big mistake, but now we have Jotham as a good king as well. Doesn't seem to help too much. All right, they had reached such a state and condition at this time that even the appointing of good leadership over them, and leadership that was a little bit more focused on the Lord and His law, that still did not seem to have much of a good effect on the people whatsoever. And but even in Jotham's day, you notice that statement there in verse 2, that he did what was right, just like his father did what was right. But you see that parenthetical statement. It says, but he did not do what his father did in entering the temple of the Lord. So still that lingering idea that his father overall generally was a good king, but he made a huge mistake and it cost him for the rest of his life. So we're dealing with a situation in Isaiah's day of a corrupt people of God. And if you look over now in the book of Isaiah, chapter 6, if You'll turn with me now to Isaiah chapter 6. We get to the point of our discussion. Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 1. And here we have a time stamp. He says, in the year that King Uzziah died. All right. Well, that was the exact period of time which we read. We have Uzziah, a leper, and he's now dead, and his son Jotham reigns in his place, but the people are a corrupt people. And so in that year, he says, I saw the Lord standing on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim, each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, with the two he flew. And one cried to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out, and the house was filled with smoke. So I said, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Now, for our purposes this evening, that's about all that we need to see, but you can certainly read on your own and see how this continues on and how Isaiah is called to speak to the people of God as a prophet. So Isaiah sees a vision. The vision is of the inner temple. And inside that sanctuary was God. God on the throne, essentially. And he's got this enormous robe. First of all, he says the throne was high and lifted up. All right, but then he sees this this robe, that the entire robe fills the temple. And so, you know, what a majestic picture of royalty that we're seeing here in the text. And then if that weren't enough, and I think that would be enough for us, I think we would be struck with awe and wonder. But if that weren't enough, we have these tremendous beings, heavenly beings about the throne. They're called here seraphim. And they're really not found anywhere else in the scriptures. There are similar beings of sorts like a cherubim, but still pretty significantly different. There are some similarities, but there are a lot of differences. We'll talk about cherubim another time. There's a lot more about them in the Bible. But seraphim, not so much, except if you look up the word, it refers to a fiery being, or even a serpent, a fiery, flying a serpent of sorts. So, but whatever the case is, we know that there seems to be fire involved anyway, but these are flying beings. In fact, they have six wings. With two, he covers his face. With two, he covers his feet. And with two, he flies. And so we have one crying to another, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. Now, notice here that he doesn't say, Holy, holy, holy. He doesn't whisper it. In fact, the voice of this one, picture yourself, you know, in this vision. Let's try to get a handle on what's going on here. We have this fiery being with these six wings crying to another one of these fiery beings saying, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord. The whole earth is full of his glory. But the intensity of that vocalization of that statement, we see in verse 4, the posts of the door being shaken and the whole house being filled with smoke. All right. So there's probably some sort of fire involved. I mean, by the very definition of a seraph, all right, or seraphim, plural, by the very definition, we're dealing with some form of fire, but you have this one crying out, "Holy, holy, holy," and the posts are being shaken, smoke has completely filled the entire area. Well, in verse 5, Isaiah speaks. And he saw this firsthand. And he opens his mouth. And he says something that I think is very similar to what you would say or what I would say. He says, "Woe is me, for I am undone. Woe is me, for I am undone." And you look at this, you know, woe, the word woe is a word of warning. And he's presenting a warning upon himself, a warning of caution upon himself. Woe is me, you know, and he says, and the reason is, he says, because I am undone. Literally, the word undone here means to be brought to silence. You think that's how you would have reacted in this situation? If you would have saw something like this, would you have been brought to silence? I think we would. And that's what Isaiah is saying. He says, what can I say about what I'm beholding with my eyes? The word can mean be brought to silence or to be caused to cease, to fail, to perish, or be destroyed. And I think Isaiah would probably, if we had him sitting here today and we asked him, now which of those definitions fit what you really meant, I think he'd probably say all of the above. He failed. He perished. He perished that day. He was destroyed at the sight of what he saw. And then the next thing he says is, because I'm a man of unclean lips and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. Now, the word unclean there means polluted, impure, defiled. Now, we already knew that Isaiah lived among a defiled people. We saw back in 2 Chronicles that the people were corrupt at that time. But I don't know much about Isaiah before he was called upon God to be a prophet to the people. But you wonder, when living in such days of corruption, if someone like Isaiah, someone like you, someone like I maybe, would look around and think that they're probably doing all right. I mean, everyone else is just rotten. And you and I might look around today. You might turn on the news or something, and you might start to rationalize some things about yourself when you see the corruption that's in the world today. You think, well, you know, I've got a pretty good chance here. I've got a pretty good chance of heaven when I look around and consider. Now, I don't think we would ever really say that. Maybe we would, I don't know, but probably not. Nevertheless, there is something about a human being like you and I. There's something about us. We do rationalize all kinds of things about our lives. We, you know, there is this little spark, this little kindling of pride, so many times, you know, that wants to excuse certain things about ourselves, excuse certain actions, excuse certain behaviors, try to justify certain things within our life. It's not so bad. I'm not so bad. I'm doing okay. I'll make it by. You know, whatever the case may be, whatever the subconscious might be telling us. I think we get that way a lot when we spend all of our time just looking really nowhere past the horizon. You know, in our pupils, we just see other people. And we see other problems and we see other corruption. And our pupils are just stuck there on the TV and on the news or the newspaper or what have you. Or we see certain things, you know, when we're out and about, whatever the case may be. We're looking in the wrong place. It's doing us no good to be fixated on the corruption in this world and making a comparison between ourselves and anything else that we see out there. We're not doing ourselves any favors. Notice Isaiah when he says, "Woe is me, I am undone. I'm a man of unclean lips. I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips." He knew the corruption in those days. He knew that he dwelt with people of unclean lips, but he also made the declaration himself, "I am right there with them. I am right there with them." Now notice what has caused him to come to such a blatant realization as this at the very end of verse 5. Note it, because this is the most important statement for the lesson. At the end of verse 5, you see his reasoning. He says, "For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." So, we can spend our time fixing our eyes on the corruption of the world. And we can spend our days sweating to rationalize, to make ourselves feel better than maybe what we really are. Comparing ourselves with what we see below the horizon. Or we can do ourselves a great service and look a little higher. Go above the horizon. Look at God. And now let's start to compare. Now let's look at Christ and let's make some comparisons in our lives. And how quickly are we going to be a lot closer to the point in which Isaiah is here in this text? Woe is me. I am undone. I am a failure. I perish. He did all this because he wasn't looking in the midst of the corrupt world he was in. He had taken a look at God. So I think we all know all too well that we are a people who do rationalize. And, you know, trying to fight against that can be difficult because it's not something that we are always consciously doing. It's on the forefront of our mind. That's not usually how it works. It's something we're not even really thinking about or even realizing what we're doing. You know, and we're looking at here or there. Or we're even looking at brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so and trying to make some comparisons. Look to Christ. You know, the writer of Hebrews said something kind of like that when in chapter 12, he said, "Look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith." I think it's chapter 12, verse 3. "Look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy who was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high." Look to him. As long as we have our eyes fixated on Christ, then our mentality, I think, is going to be pretty successful. I think we're not going to be in this very troublesome waters of rationalizing our actions and behaviors in this earth. We're not going to be like that guy that Jesus talked about when he was in the flesh. He talked about the man who was so concerned about the speck in his brother's eye. Remember that? The speck in his brother's eye. He was so concerned. He wanted to get that speck out of his brother's eye. And he didn't even realize he had a 2x4 hanging out of his own eye. Jesus talked about it. It's all throughout the scriptures. We find example after example of individuals. We think we are at a level in which we are, where we might say in 1 hour, "Lord, I will never deny you. I would never deny you." And before the morning comes, we've denied him 3 times. I think what we learn about here in Isaiah 6... it's just such a simple, good application that works for every minute of every day. We need to open our eyes. Look beyond this horizon. We need to open our eyes to God. We need to see Him each and every day, just like Isaiah saw him. Saw the glory, saw the majesty, saw the beauty of absolute pure holiness. And we need to come to that realization each day. Woe is me. I am not as good as I think I was yesterday. I've got work to do, and I got to get to it. Well, that's the lesson this morning, and I appreciate, or this evening, rather. I appreciate your attention, and I want to invite you, if you need the help and prayers of the congregation, that you would come forward.